If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Good afternoon. Bill and Wendy off to a wedding for their producer, Kevin, which is tremendous support. Congratulations to all three, mainly to Kevin.
not so much to Bill and Wendy, but yeah.
Well, that's right. We're congratulating them on being good radio hosts and joining their producer in a wedding weekend. I'm not exactly sure what tonight is. I'm assuming it's a rehearsal dinner. I probably should have been paying more attention to the details.
The actual wedding is tonight.
Thank you, Joey Gelman, producing the show today. Who gets married on a Friday? What's going on here? That's not okay. Amy, Guth.
Don't judge Kevin Richter's wedding. I think, you know, people are getting less traditional about that, of what day of the week they get married and when. And also, it's extremely expensive to get married and to have a venue and all that. So I think people kind of are like, yeah, sure, Wednesday, great, because that's $8 million less.
I would be in for a Wednesday wedding or a Tuesday wedding or a Monday wedding. I'd even go like Thursday at like 2 o'clock at some point here. A desperation's hit over here. I know we're not talking about that today. I'd take a midweek wedding for not a lot of money at this point, all day. All right, so we got a new plan for the city, Amy Guth. Mayor Rahm speaking last night, 300 invited guests. Were you invited?
Yeah, I mean, he sent me a text, but I couldn't make it, so it was fine.
Well, I'm sure he understood, right? You got a busy schedule. 300 invited guests, Malcolm X College on the West Side, and we got the three-part plan to making the city better. Part number one, we want all your opinions on this, 312-981-7200, but part one is he wants to hire more police officers for the city, Amy, a bunch more. 970-odd more new officers by the end of 2018 to be on the streets to help de-escalate the violence. Thoughts?
What do you think about that?
Well, I think that a key part in my mind, if you're going to bring in more officers and take on that level of debt, pensions, and everything, I'm okay with that as long as, however, the new officers are being trained is a very much relevant to the times we are in, progressive de-escalation of violence. Everything that you see from Tulsa to Charlotte to instances that happen that should not be happening. I feel like there's just got to be a whole new way about how police officers entering the force are trained to go about their business. And I think they have a really, really tough job. It's been said a million times. But if you're going to hire more officers, and you're going to train them in a way that speaks to today, that would be exciting to me, I guess, as part of the plan.
Yes, and also, I think it's really important that we talk about protocol of how, when, you know, inevitably things are going to happen, and there needs to be some standard protocol of how it's handled, cataloged, and disclosed. And then also, I think the big thing kind of the pink elephant in the room here right now is that you can keep adding police and adding police, and I'm with you. You know, that's a hard job, and it's not a job for everyone, and it's a very risky job that involves a lot of sacrifice, but. What no one's really talking about right now is the relationship between the police department and the communities that make up the city. And that's a piece that needs to be addressed. You can't just keep throwing police at a city. You have to deal with how the police are accepted into communities and integrated into communities.
Well, and I think that's really interesting because who are the police, right? They live in the community, in theory. At least some do, right? Now, I'm not necessarily saying they live in the exact community that they're policing in, but these are people that you don't stand in the officer outfit all day long. You actually do take that off and go to sleep in a house in some community, right? So when you have this separation, there's the police and then there's community. It's like almost creates, just even that language creates a divide.
Well, yes, but indeed, putting on a police uniform does give you some degree of authority that the average civil, like that you and I do not have.
True.
I mean, like it or not, right? I mean, if a cop shows up, they have the authority to do things, even like unspoken authority. There's an air of authority. There's a sense that perhaps, there are different consequences for different people in the world. And I think we've seen that play out in this country quite a bit in the last 2 years.
Yeah, over and over and over again. But I listen, if you're working every day, right, in Inglewood or wherever, at some point you would think that you're going to become a part of that community. You're gonna be seeing the same people all the time. There's got to be a better. However you're attaching to community leaders or whatever it is, there's got to be some way that Chicago is moving forward in that direction. And that's part of what the mayor is speaking about. And by the way, he was on Steve Cochran, the show this morning. You can hear that podcast if you'd like at WGNradio.com.
Nice plug. Good job.
Right.
Nice.
Well,
yes, you can be in a community every day, but doesn't necessarily mean you are fully being in that community. And there's
right.
a difference between showing up and being there. I mean, think of any place, any workplace. You can show up and be there. It doesn't mean you're part of the team. Doesn't mean you're part of the group. Doesn't mean anyone is a fan of yours. You know what I mean? Like there are nuances to it. You can't just show up and demand authority. You have to, especially where there's already broken trust with a police department. There was a really great interview with Rhymefest.
Yeah.
He was on Chicago Tonight and Carol Maureen was interviewing him about his recent, he was robbed and he went to the police and he was describing what occurred when he got there. And he said there was a woman like playing Candy Crush and wouldn't help him. And he's like, look, I'm not here to rip cops. I'm saying cops need, even at one point he said that he was told, look, we're overwhelmed and we're desensitized. And, you weren't bleeding. You were just robbed. It's fine. We're going to do our best. And so he said, I acknowledge there's a degree of desensitization going on, but also let us look at mental health options for police officers so that there's not that desensitization. You don't want them like crying at every single crime scene, but also you want people to be compassionate. You don't want people to block off their compassion for fellow human beings because that's not helping integrate anybody into any community.
Well, and that's what you hit on a lot there. First of all, I saw Shay Rhymefest Smith on, he was on CNN this morning, mm-hmm. incredibly impressive talker and obviously very,
he's very thoughtful. I mean, his messages are often very thoughtful, very, very human. He's not, he doesn't sound like a guy like promoting a bunch of like a big PR platform. He really is great at looking at all sides. And he seems to always go out looking to create dialogue and find a place, a middle ground to facilitate dialogue.
Right. And that's exactly how he was speaking today about, listen, there are some things that the mayor said that are great. And there are some things that need improvement and different focus that perhaps was not given in the 40-minute speech last night at Malcolm X College. I mean, some of the other stuff that the mayor is going for, he announced a 3-year, $36 million plan to expand mentoring programs, and he talks about 7,200 young men in 8th, 9th, and 10th grades at Chicago public schools in the city's most violent neighborhoods, and he wants a mentor for each of them. Now, where these mentors are going to come from, and ideally they would come from their own community, people that have risen from the same spots that these kids are in, that would be ideal, correct? I mean, you want actual jobs to people coming from that area who can say, hey, this was the path that I took and you can do it too, rather than somebody who's really not familiar with the community at all. That would be the ideal. I'm not saying that's possible.
Well, I think there's a disconnect. If you are being mentored by someone from vastly different circumstances, a different race, perhaps a different socioeconomic group, it's very difficult to just say, hang in there, slugger, you can do it. Like, just fill out that college application and you're going to be fine. That's a tone deaf approach. And it's really important, I think, it's important that young people, I believe anyway, it's important that young people see people that look like themselves represented in all areas of commerce, because it's very difficult to look at a CEO who doesn't look like you and imagine yourself there.
Right. I think that's incredibly fair. How can I get to that spot? You don't look like me at all. What is the path? How do I do this? Oh, am I supposed to go to this school where I'm in a classroom with 50 odd people and 40 of them are not paying attention or doing their homework? Where's the role model? I mean, all that. I understand personal accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
But listen, in my world, you want 7,200 mentors? I'm in. I would like to be one of those 7,200, and I've talked about that for a long time. So, and I know maybe we're coming back here, we can sort of have a conversation on how you can do better. I'm sure there are people out there that want to help. I know that you're one of those people, Amy, that's done a lot yourself. Fair enough to say?
Yeah, I mentor a lot. I formally and informally.
Well, you mentor me every Saturday when I get off the...
I don't know if it's mentoring as much as taking you to school.
Yeah. When I get off the beat on Saturday and the Navy takes over the Saturday Night Special, I always get a couple of a... you can do this better there, buddy.
I don't think I've ever said it quite like that.
How would... Anyway, how
we
did
should take a break.
Oh. Okay. Let me think about how she actually said it during this timeout. All right, coming on, and I appreciate all of it, by the way. It's helpful, and I thank you. 720 WGN. 3 days away from the great debate. Talk about that after 1:30. It's Hillary. It's Donald. It's Monday night.
Sounds like a wrestling match.
Lester Holt, man. That's your moderator. Come on, Lester. I'd love to see Amy Guth in that role. I'm just going
to
be honest.
I would love to moderate a debate. I think that would be a phenomenal job.
I think you'd be amazingly good at it. And I'm going to...
I would let nothing go.
You know you wouldn't.
I would let nothing go. But that's the key. That's what makes a good moderator for a debate. You cannot let stuff go.
Well, and again, they have three of them. So Lester's doing the first one. How do we get you in at number two or number three?
I don't know. Let's text somebody.
All right. Let's make a move here. Hey, we're talking about Mayor Rahm, who's got the three-part plan to making the city better, and he's had 300 people at Malcolm X College yesterday, and he did it at 6 o'clock, so it would be on every news channel, and he was on Steve Cochran's show this morning, and I mean, this is a whole campaign, and obviously Rahm knowing, I think, that violence in the city could sink him as far as being the mayor, so he's out there. We were talking about mentoring, and Amy, I know you have a ton of thoughts on this, and 312-981-7200. Best thoughts about how to make Chicago better. We've got gifts for you. If you were, so let's say somebody stepped up and they were one of the 7,200 and they came to you, Amy Guth, and was like, hey, how can I best serve this role as a mentor? What would you tell them?
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer for that. I think that that varies by person, by skill set, and aspirations of the person being mentored. I think that matters. You can't just put any person, you know, it has to be a good fit. It has to match the aspirations of the person. And I think there's sort of a sense of, oh, desperate times, desperate measures. Let's just get everybody with a role model. That's just not true. You have to honor the person. You have to honor the human being. Even if it's a kid, you have to honor their skill set and their strengths as a person. But you know what I find really, you know, troubling about this whole conversation is that I cannot engage in a conversation about this with, I mean, the facts are the facts. We see crime rates, we see violence rates, we see that, but let us remember that. Let us just consider the fact that we might be making things slightly worse with a disempowering narrative. This city,
say more.
This city is built as a very segregated one, mm-hmm. It is very easy to not see neighborhoods you don't want to see in the city. And
it's how most people in the city live.
Which is how most people in the city live, which is why, you know, people like in December when there was a protest that was very peaceful on Michigan Avenue over the Laquan McDonald tape, you know, people, number one, said, oh, it's a riot, which was not a riot. It was a very quiet march. But also people were saying, why not do that in the neighborhood where this occurred? And because people wouldn't notice.
Right.
People don't want to look at certain neighborhoods of this city. So there's that. But also when we talk about mentors, when we talk about things needed, indeed, perhaps mentors are needed, perhaps that we do need more cops in the city. But also, there's also some really beautiful and wonderful things happening in parts of the city that some people would rather ignore.
No question.
And we don't talk about that. We talk about the positive things happening on the north side. We talk about the negative things happening on the south side.
Well, it's interesting that you put it like that, because when Jackie Robinson West was, mm-hmm. was winning the Little League World Series, and I don't care about the fallout, but when that was going on, to me it was the most... I felt the city together at that point more than I had ever felt it. And a lot of the celebrations and rallies were going on at Lake in Michigan, or State in Lake, whatever it was, right next to the Chicago Theater. And you had all walks of life from all parts of the city down there to support and celebrate a tremendous story. And when I would go down there and talk to people, they would say things like, you know, there's so much negative shined on our community. And there's just a lot of positive stories that are just not being told.
It's absolutely true.
And that, I mean, that's what you're hitting on right there.
Yeah.
So
there are organizations doing phenomenal, wonderful work in neighborhoods that are only in the headlines when tragedy strikes.
So why are those stories not being told in your mind? It's just not that interesting?
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's...
People just don't know?
I think people don't know. I think people... I think it's easier to connect. You know, if you start an organization in certain neighborhoods, it's probably easier to have access to outlets to help you promote what you're doing. And I think too, there's sort of a sense of a very unfortunate sense of like surprise. They're like, oh, that's happening there. How interesting. Like, well, no, there's good stuff happening. There's a lot of interesting things happening in the area of food justice. There's a wonderful Peace House in Inglewood called iGrow, and it's lovely. And kids are getting yoga and job training and mentoring and all these beautiful things. But and that the people that live around it, like, you know, it's brightly colored and beautifully painted, but like, we don't hear about that. We hear about, you know, violence, because I mean, obviously, loss of human life is news wherever it happens in the world, and so we talk about that, and it's big and scary things. But I worry about this very disempowering narrative that it's so black and white, that it's just good things happen here, bad things happen here, which stacks the odds against other narratives.
Well said. Hey, coming up on the 1:30 news when we come back here, 312-981-7200 if you want to join the conversation. We'll also talk about the great debate. That's what I'm... Is it cool that I'm calling it that? That's what I feel it is.
Sure.
The great debate, Monday night. Hillary, Donald, will you sleep all weekend? And one shout out to the mayor. A part of his three-part plan, the best anti-crime program is a job, which he wants job fairs, providing for summer youth employment, and he's charging developers of downtown high-rises fees to help pay for projects in economically depressed neighborhoods. More jobs in those neighborhoods that you're speaking on, Mayor, would be, I think, a huge part of making your plan work. All right, Steve Bertrand's got the news next, 720 WGN.
Amy Guth and Mark Harmon in for Bill and Wendy today. They are off seeing their esteemed producer, Kevin Richter, getting married today. So congratulations to him.
Nonstop success stories at WGN Radio.
It's true.
Way to go, Kevin Richter. I'm so proud of you. That is the glamour family of GN, by the way. The glamour marriage. Kevin is very, very attractive, and so is his wife.
His Instagram feed is like a constant photo shoot. They're models. I know.
It's unbelievable. I look at them like, why can't I be like you? I want to be you. Congratulations, Kevin.
And you can tell in looking at pictures of them, they are a very, very happy couple. And you can just tell it. You see it. You can just see it coming out of the pictures. It's lovely. Wish them well.
See, I never trust that, though. If you're showing me your pics on Facebook and Instagram and all the time, and you're smiling and everything's great and hunky-dory, I just don't believe it.
In this
scenario, I do, but I'm just talking about in general.
I think you can tell. You can tell when someone's in that kind of grin and bear it mode versus when someone's genuinely happy. You can tell just the way people look at each other. There's like the air between them is just sort of charged in a different way.
Mm.
It's true.
Okay.
Anyway, my friends, the debate is in 3 days. There's lots to talk about with that. But, you know, we were just wrapping up the topic of we were talking about Rahm and his new plan for stemming violence in the city and creating more jobs and doing all the things and getting all the mentors and lots of stuff. And we, of course, always want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I think we have a caller too. Hi, Sue. You're on WGN.
Hi, Amy and Mark.
Hello.
And hi. And God help us with this election, but I wanted to just put a couple of cents in here to just say that, you know, it's easy for us to become all jaded and cynical and everything about things, but there's, for example, a website like, for example, goodnewsnetwork.org that, you know, I would say to my mom through all the years, even as when I was a kid and a teenager, I'm in my mid-40s, anyway, that why is news always bad? Unfortunately, that's what makes the headlines. There is good news, like the gentleman, you know, with all the fundraising and so on, like that with the little cart. And also, there is such a thing as optimistic realism, and so I just feel very strongly about these things. There is such a thing as optimistic realism that is not looking through rose-colored glasses, but realism is not always negativity. There
Absolutely.
Is such a thing as that, and I just wanted to say that to you guys this afternoon, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay,
thanks,
Sue.
You too, Sue.
Sue, are you optimistic or are you not optimistic? Where are you, Sue?
I really am. I'm fighting it. No, I really have always been a very, very optimistic person my whole life. I really strive for that.
Good for you, Sue.
Have a balance.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue.
Thank you.
We need more Sues out there. I like optimism. I'm pro-optimism, Amy.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a tendency, right? I'm with Sue. And I think we have a tendency to want to call something positive or negative. Sometimes things are just what they are. Sometimes they are just the facts. And they are, you know, there can be a negative side to it. But, you know, I think a lot of the narrative we hear a lot is like, oh, the media is so negative. Like, why don't you report good news? Sometimes we don't know it. Sometimes, you know, you can't just say, breaking, no one got killed today. That's not news. Like, by definition, something has to occur for it to be news. And I think there's a quick thing of like, oh, the news is so negative. Well, the news is just the facts. I mean, it's just what's happening.
I mean, maybe we could start our own news channel.
Because that's what the world needs, is yet another news org.
Right.
We work for the finest one. Why would we do that?
So-and-so walked down the street today, had a great pace to them. I think they hit on their Fitbit, 2,000 steps. That could be the lead right there. And that could change the whole narrative.
Yeah.
Crickets. 312-981-7200. Hey, Sean, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you?
We're great, Sean.
All right, I was calling. You know, Rob came out with this great plan that he's going to hire new police officers, and his plan does not account for the volume of police officers that are retiring next year. And then in addition, I mean, the police departments don't even have vehicles that are up and running right now. I don't know how he's going to pay for all this.
So you're saying it's not quite enough?
No, it won't even... The Chicago Police Department is operating at its lowest levels ever right now.
Sean, are you involved?
No, not at all, but I live in the community.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. These are our police officers. They serve with us.
Sure.
They serve for us, and it's unbelievable right now.
So do you think there's a kind of an approach that would be better in that we need to, you know, fix everything that's there first, fix the equipment, update cars, et cetera, invest in training?
Well, I mean, we've got closed schools. We've got police officers that are hesitant to be involved in the community right now, and I get that. We've got infrastructure that's falling apart. Rom ran his first time saying that he was not going to hire more police officers.
Yeah.
And now he's hiring more police officers. It's typical Chicago talking in circles, not getting anything done.
So I'm hearing a non-trust of the mayor out of you, Sean. Is that fair?
Oh, and the mayors, the aldermen, there's so much government in Chicago, it's just impossible right now to get anything done.
All right. Appreciate you, Sean. 312-981-7200.
Just asking a clarifying point.
No, I feel you. I mean, I don't know what the number would be, which would satisfy.
Well, what I was hoping to get him to weigh in on was whether do we think that it would be more favorable to fix what is broken and then move forward with new people, or keep adding new people while hopefully trying to fix as you go. You know, there's kind of two approaches. You could kind of be adding new people while you're fixing broken systems, or stop, hold up, let's fix the broken system and then move forward.
Right. And if Amy Guth was in charge, you would do?
You got to fix the broken system because that dictates culture.
Right. I mean, infrastructure in this city versus and the country, right? That's a huge opportunity to A, make things better, B, give jobs, C, stimulate the economy. Like a lot of possibility right there, right?
If you think about the mindset during which you're hired, if there's suddenly a culture change, you know, let's say we're at culture A now, we want to get to culture B. If you hire somebody during culture A, that's just another, you know, another mind you need to change, another reformat you need to do to get to culture B. So you need to hire for the culture you want to be in. So we got to fix things first.
Right. Leadership would be an issue there too, correct? As far as changing culture, who is going to be leading the way? Who is what within the department, within the community, all that type of stuff, right?
I feel a segue coming on.
Yeah. we have a segue coming. 312-981-7200. The leadership of this company. of this country. I'm just really looking forward to the debate on Monday night, just from pure entertainment.
I'm looking forward to the later in the second week of November, breathing and sleeping through the night. That's what I'm looking forward to for the first time in months.
And that's possible. A bunch of people seem to want to weigh in on what's going on in Chicago, too, so we can take those calls coming back here, along with Amy Guth getting some sleep come November. What does that sleep look like? We'll do that next. 312-981-7200, 720 WGN. Hey, it's 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are getting married.
That's how rumors get started.
Neither of them actually are getting married, but Kevin Richter is. So you have Amy Guth and yours truly, Mark Carman, until 3 when Ro Khan will be there. So people talking about positive stuff going on in the community from the 708. You guys should look up the Chicago Children's Choir. 4,400 kids in the city, 11 neighborhood choirs from Rogers Park to Austin, 79 in school choirs. And the top kids practice at the Cultural Center. There's a positive story for you, brought to you by 720 WGN. Were you ever in the choir, Amy?
I was. Yeah, I was in my school choir.
Can I get you to sing us one little ditty right now?
You probably could, but no. Not appropriate for this show.
Okay.
I will sing sometime. I usually sing the drop of a hat.
I hated being in the choir. Like, felt like I was forced to be in the choir. It was like seventh grade, but then there was all these cute girls in the choir.
All the ladies are in choir.
Right. And a manly man like myself.
I think choir's awkward for young men.
Yeah, extremely. But then if somebody says to you, you have a good voice, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big affirmation that you don't get every day. And you can get that in the choir.
Yeah.
See?
Well, you don't sing every day, but you sing. Or you mean when a girl says that to you?
Yes, or even the teacher.
Sure,
you have a wonderful voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're building confidence in young men and women, of course. But like if a guy is in choir and he's feeling insecure like I was, and you tell them that they have a good voice, it changes the whole thing. A lot of people are texting in about where's the money going to come from as far as the city's concerned. I'm sure they'll tax somebody and find it somewhere. That's, you know, if they want to find the money, they'll find the money. Right? I mean, something, you're going to rob Peter to pay Paul. That's what we do.
Looks to Springfield with questioning eyes.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I understand the budget issues that we have, but if you make it the way he's made it, this is the priority and this is going to happen, and do the budget around this, they'll find the dough. Something else is going to get kicked down the road.
It's just a matter of what you reprioritize and how angry everyone gets over that.
Well, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on what's important.
Sure.
Well, I do too. I mean, I know you do.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, it's sometimes very difficult to justify. You know, when we hear those stories of like people having like very cushy positions that are, you know, government funded, those are, I think, always very hard to swallow when it's a dire time, when the state budget is such a mess, when upgrades to police equipment are needed and, you know, basic things are needed to be covered, when we need to cover those things. And yet we're like, well, and this person took a bunch of people on a fancy trip.
Or, right.
You know, those kind of things are very difficult to swallow. So,
yeah, I want to go back in the day to when Walter Jacobson would be doing his stuff on the 6 o'clock news and you would have like a picture of three guys sleeping in a truck and they're getting paid $75 an hour. Walter always knew. We need more of that out there. I love.
Right.
No, I just dated myself significantly, but right. You want the money to be well spent.
Yeah, right. You want it to be well spent. And I think when the stakes are high, hard decisions have to be. I mean, but it's the same kind of conversation that happens in a household, right? When money's tight, you maybe don't go on vacation that year, or maybe you shop at a discount or whatever. You know, you make decisions for tough times when the stakes are very high. And I think sometimes it's very easy to lose sight of the big picture when it's a big budget, like encompassing a city.
I mean, I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich today. That's the only thing I've eaten.
Wow. We gotta talk to the boss around here.
We do. Hey, Catherine, welcome to WGN. You want to talk about the gangs? Huh? Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah, the mayor, I think he had a really good point that he wants to do nice things, wonderful things. There's wonderful people in the city. There's wonderful agencies. But, you know, the problem is the gangs, the gangbangers, the guns, whatever they do to get the money for their guns, whatever they're into, whether it's drugs or whatever. That's what the problem is. There's tons of nice, wonderful people, and the money for those for the 70 or the 7,200 mentors is a wonderful idea. But you know, a lot of those people would be the good kids who aren't in the gang. The problem is, if you could get to the gangbangers, they need programs for the gangbangers. They need more police just specifically for them. Special programs so that when these young kids are in gangs and they behave badly, that instead of going to prison, they go to a special, like,
rehab, like, something.
Not like a rehab, but more like the army for the kids.
Okay, yeah. Hang on, Catherine. Let's respond to you.
Yeah, I think that restorative justice topic is a really interesting one, and more people working in the legal industry seem to be interested in that and offering alternatives. Because, you know, the best analogy I've ever heard to make the case for restorative justice was essentially, you know, a kid with no access to swimming lessons ever suddenly gets thrown in a lake. He cannot swim, so we lock him up for a little while. When he's out of jail, he's thrown again in the lake again. He still can't swim, so we put him back in jail, and we keep throwing him in a lake until he can swim, rather than teaching him to swim. So I think a restorative justice movement is badly needed, not just here, but everywhere. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, really. I think hear this right, that equal access is really what we need here. And I think there is, I thought that too. I think there is kind of a danger of, if we supply mentors, who gets dibs on them, who gets access to them the most. And sure, you only want to reward people who want to do the work and want to make the most of a mentorship. But also, I think it's important to give every kid a chance. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all human beings and everybody deserves a chance.
Right. And in an ideal scenario, no matter who the leaders are in a community, you're going to have some relation, right? I mean, if somebody's making a ton of the dough in the community by running a gang or whatever, like, you want to be at least hearing that voice and having that dialogue, whatever that looks like. Because they are recruiting a lot of young people, and they have influence. I don't know exactly what that looks like at all, but it's, you can't just deny their existence and just try to lock everybody up, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's get Jim in here. 312-981-7200 wants to talk about what Rahm didn't know, that he doesn't think the mayor knew what he was getting into. All right, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, Jim.
No, you know, that I was talking about the previous caller saying, well, Rahm promised he wasn't going to hire any more police, and my point is that a guy campaigns on one thing, and how much does he know before he gets in office? And I think in Rahm's case, once he got in, he found out the city was in a different condition than he thought. So conditions change as a man becomes mayor. So doesn't that mean sometimes some of the things he promised or talked about just can't happen? They have to go in the opposite direction.
Okay. Hey.
I think that's part of being a an elected official.
Yeah.
All right, Jim. We'll respond to that. I wouldn't think the guy didn't know what the mayor wouldn't know what he was getting involved in. But what's happened as far as the police force and how that has come back at him, he certainly wasn't expecting to be dealing with the amount of turmoil that he's had there. Getting rid of his superintendent, you know, I mean, that's been a huge variable that I don't think the mayor was factoring in as far as what his life would be like.
Absolutely, and I really feel like CPD is going to be so tied to his legacy forever.
No doubt.
I mean, no doubt. That is going to be the resounding theme of his time in office.
Well, and he's thrown the... he's trying to get a life, what am I trying to say here?
I don't know.
He needs,
what are you trying to say?
He needs a little lifeboat, a little rescue by, okay, we're going to fire you, and I'm going to show you what I'm going to do, and please elect me again, right? I mean, that's basically, are you feeling me at all there?
I have no idea what you just said.
He fires.
Like, wait, I'm you.
I think a lot.
Who's Rahm?
I'm saying that he fired Gary McCarthy.
Yeah.
In essence, to save his own job.
Oh, absolutely.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure.
I could have made that a lot more clear by being direct. Thank you.
It's all good.
All right. We got a ton of calls here, and we do want to talk about the election, but we have the news coming up at 2:720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth and Mark Carmen in for Bill and Wendy today. They are off seeing their esteemed producer, Kevin Richter, getting married, and we wish him well. Hearty congratulations unto him. My friends, I have something to discuss with you. We have something as a nation to discuss, and especially in 3 days, the big old election debates are coming up 3 days from now. And I don't know that anyone knows what in the world to expect, but I think there's a lot to talk about here with election things.
Let's start with just the basics here. We got 90 minutes. I think we all need to brace ourselves for what's coming here. 90 minutes. I mean, that's a long time.
That's a long time.
I mean, that's if I was the Don, as I like to call him, I would be. I'm sure the Don overrides any terror on anything, but I would be pretty afraid to be up there for 90 minutes. Six 15-minute segments. Lester Holt, the main man, moderating, and he'll start off each segment with a question, and then we'll move from there.
I'm telling you, that's the best gig. I would love to moderate a debate.
All right, well, what's your question number one? Question number.
Oh God, I don't know if I don't know what the first question would be. I have many. I think the key though is the question is just a jumping off point. The what makes a moderate? Your phone is blowing up, Mark Carmen.
Rob's calling. I gotta. I'm sorry. Had it on vibrate. Now we're on mute. There we go.
Good. There we go.
My bad. Talk to you later, Rob.
Come back in. All right.
I'm here.
I think what separates a fine moderator from a completely awesome moderator is one that just doesn't let anybody off the hook. Like, what do you mean? No. What do you mean by that? And just really stays on them equally.
Right.
So that they both really are taken to the mat to explain themselves explicitly, because we all know, I mean, we can all point to politician X is just talking out of the side of his or her mouth or whatever. Every politician in the history of ever has been accused of that. There's part of politicking. Politicking is about getting votes.
Yes.
Once you are elected, it is about being a lawmaker and a leader. But getting there is about getting votes. So there are, you know, two distinct hats to wear in one's political career. And in the moment, we are in the part where you're getting votes. So, of course, people are going to be talking to different groups and tailoring their message. So a good moderator is just going to take you to task. What do you mean by the thing you just said? It's very key.
And in this particular debate, you would think that at least one of the candidates would really not like to be pinned down. That's how I see it.
Yes.
I mean,
they have very different styles of speaking and of conveying information.
I mean, Hillary's talking about how she's going to be sitting there basically fact-checking him the whole time. I don't know what that looks like. How does she plan on doing that? In one of the Republican debates, it came out that the Don had lied 60% of the time by a pre-convention, a PolitiFact, right? Okay. And Hillary's lying 13% of the time. So it's not like she's telling all truths here. So she's lying, and they rated the pants on fire lie that Hillary told one and Donald told 30. So I don't, like, if I'm advising Hillary, her sitting there with like a notebook, no, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true. I mean, would you advise like to do that? I would just, if I was her, I would want to see him unhinged. I'd want to see him.
Right. If I were her, or if I were her political strategist, which would be another cool job, I think, to be a campaign strategist, I think would be very interesting. But nonetheless, I would probably advise her to just give him a long rope.
Let him talk.
Let him talk. Let him show himself as not being as... make yourself appear like the stable one. Give him room to make big errors. Let him be bull in China shop. Let him say great falsehoods. Then calmly, pointedly take him to, that's inaccurate. This is this. This is the truth of it. And give him that. Because I think then that shows, if you're able to do that, it shows you as a balanced leader. And it shows that you have information. You already know the facts. You know that information.
Right.
If I were his campaign strategist,
mm-hmm.
Well, he's not. He wouldn't listen to me anyway. I don't think.
Prob's not. No.
I would hate to be his handler. I don't think that would be a very frustrating job to be his handler. I don't know. I mean, I think he's very good at getting people stirred up and getting them to calling people to action, and I think that's been his strength as a leader so far in this campaign.
Well, people are angry, right, and they want change, and so he represents in a lot of people's mind change, right, and that's That's his energy. That's his juice. And you like how things are? I know you don't. Well, look at me. Make America great again. I got a red hat.
Right. That hat's not flattering on him. Which brings me to another point.
Yes, go ahead.
And that is, it has been such an unprecedented election. I think we can all agree on that. And let me start by saying, I'm always coming from the place of wanting to find space to have the conversation. Rarely am I saying anything because I want someone to think what I think. I just want to hold conversation. So I think it is fascinating how we have described our candidates so differently and the way we have treated them so differently, just the narratives around them, the way even voters casually talk about them. I don't understand how anyone is undecided at this point at all. But nonetheless, the people on the fence, there's like a little bit of kind of rhetoric around it, around like, well, you know, I don't really like him, but she seems like a mean person. Well, he doesn't seem like I would go have a tea party with him either. You know, I mean,
right.
we're like holding her personality into the equation in a way that we don't hold his.
Well, I think you want somebody balanced as a president, but I also don't think you want somebody super nice. You're the president. You have to make hard decisions.
Let us make a distinction between, you know, nice has become a very dirty word.
Okay.
Nice is about civility.
It can be.
And you do want that. We have made it. We have twisted that word to be about disempowerment and about being a doormat.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
And I don't think that's accurate. I don't think that's fair.
Right.
You don't want someone milquetoast to be your president.
Right. We don't want nice to be synonymous with weak. That's that, right?
Right.
Soft.
We don't want that in a president.
We don't.
We want someone who's going to make hard decisions. Look, you couldn't pay me enough to be the president. Those are hard decisions that would lead to a lot of sleepless nights. There's a lot of decisions, some of which have human lives in your hands.
We sure that we can't get you to be president.
You know what?
I'll push that initiative.
You are not the first person to tell me to get into politics.
Well, you love it. I mean, that's
I
it. You're very passionate
but
about
like
it.
Analyzing it. I don't know if I want to campaign. Well, I think that'd be
terrible. Oh, yeah, but you're passionate about a lot of things.
Sure.
So that's why people want you involved, Amy Guth. You have to own that. That's important for us and important for the world. And I feel as your partner today, 1-3, filling in for Bill and Wendy, that I'm going to push that initiative. You all right?
All right, good.
Don't worry about that. Hey, Bill, welcome to 720 WGN. What's up, Bill?
Oh, it's BJ.
Oh, BJ. My bad, BJ.
Hi there. That's okay. You haven't done anything bad so far. You're being very reasonable and very calm. You guys have to have heard Hillary. She is calm and reasonable.
Yeah.
She's not a hysterical person.
Absolutely.
She's not an imbecile. She's brilliant. She knows what to do. The only hysterical who says it very calmly is Donald, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, he comes up with stuff, crooked Hillary. I mean, we had one lady who's supporting him who said that she can't stand it that Hillary wears pantsuits all the time. So what if she has bad legs? She should wear a dress. And he's talking about she doesn't look presidential. I mean, come on. These people who are voting for him, could they be as moronic as he is? Is that a much bunch of our population? Who would vote for this guy? What reasonable, thinking, intelligent person would think that he would know what to do or how to talk to people?
So BJ, you're not undecided?
Well, of course not. But, you know, I mean, seriously, if there were another serious candidate, would I look at them? No, I would. Honestly, I would never vote Republican as long as the Republican men still think that they should be telling women whether or not they can have an abortion or birth control or anything else that isn't their business.
Thank you, BJ.
I would never vote Republican, but honestly, seriously, listen to her. She's a calm, reasonable, intelligent person.
Absolutely agreed.
Thanks, BJ.
Please come by the studio and let me high five you, BJ, for what you just said.
Right. Well, and what she hit on there at the end, though, I think is very important. Like, what are you voting on? Like, for me,
that's the thing. We are making unfair comparisons, and people are factoring in her personality in a way that is not being factored in with when we talk about Trump's personality.
Right. I mean, where are you on as far as gun control? Where are you at on that? Where are you on abortion? Where are you on a million different issues, and who do you align with?
Well, what's very interesting about this election is that single issue voter is, we're not having a lot of conversations about the single issue voter right now because the stakes are far higher. which is kind of what Bernie was speaking to just recently, saying, hey, guys, this ain't the time for a protest vote. This is not about your guy not being in the race. Get out there and do it. Same kind of deal with the single issue voter. Some people are like, I'm not on board with the way candidate A feels about this, but I think the stakes are too high. I can't possibly vote for candidate B. So candidate A's got me.
And as far as the protest vote goes, you want to go and vote for the Green Party candidate. You want to vote that's fine. But vote is my thing.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, this, if you're looking at Nate Silver, if you're looking at, you know, if you're, the Washington Post has a story just today that about there's a professor who has successfully predicted the presidential winner for the last 30, I don't know, many, many elections. And, you know, Nate Silver's data is all pointing to this. And I think a lot of it is Trump has done a very good job of mobilizing or undereducated white men, who is usually a very small voter turnout group, or at least not a very predictably high one. And there's a lot of people who are making the decision to abstain from voting because they feel like, if I can't vote my full conscience, I'm not going to vote at all. Which leads me to another tangent, but we got to take a break.
We do, and we have somebody on the line who says that WGN has forced them to vote for Donald Trump. So I hope that Nick hangs on. We can talk to him after this timeout. It's WGN's fault. 720 WGN. Text line, who's filling in for Bill and Wendy? Who are you?
I'm Amy Guth.
I'm Mark Harmon. Bill and Wendy are... It's good that I like that our voices are not similar
at all.
Right. So that way they know that we're not Bill and Wendy. And so Bill and Wendy can be confused with the thoughts that are coming out of you.
They don't get blamed for anything we say today.
Right. Right. A lot of people are texting in. Well, here's one. You underestimate how many of us secretly vote for Trump, even though it's popular and trendy to say you're voting for Hillary. Not going to argue, just going to vote. And then there's others saying that I would never, ever, 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 ever vote for Hillary. There's a lot of those out there. Never, ever, ever. People don't like Hillary. They don't like the pantsuit. They don't like...
It's very threatening, the idea of having a woman in the White House. So see, let's really call it what it is.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
So you think it's just the part that if she was a man, this wouldn't be going on.
I'm not saying she is not without scrutiny. Like, there is fair scrutiny upon her. There should be fair scrutiny upon anyone seeking office anywhere in this country. However, she is held to standards that would never be asked of a man.
Well,
absolutely never be asked of a man.
One that I hadn't thought about until today, which I should have thought about. I mean, Donald has been married and divorced 3 times. What would that look like if that was Hillary Clinton?
It would absolutely factor into her credibility.
There's no... She would be crushed for that. Crushed.
Let's even talk about women peripheral to all this, right?
And by the way, I don't think that's a big deal that he has been married and divorced 3 times.
No.
I don't think it's ideal either, but I don't think that should matter. I'm just pointing out what the narrative would be.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, whatever. Things happen, but I mean, I'd divorce the guy if I found myself married to him too, so whatever. But I think it's a very unfair standard, but I also, a point to illustrate this, which I think is really fascinating, when Melania Trump delivered this speech at the RNC and everybody jumped all over that, the dress sold out online in 2 hours, whatever, all these things happened, a lot of people started saying, oh, for the first time she looked like a first lady, which then sparked conversation about what would we call Bill Clinton in the, if Hillary wins, what do we call him? We don't say first lady, we say first man. What do we, there were more than one outlet of political pundits came out and said, you know, I think Chelsea would fill that role of first lady. To me, like, how bizarrely are we locked into the roles of what men and women do that we have to assign that? Do you know what I mean? It just seemed like so stark, and it was such an interesting tell to me about how we are so unwilling to surrender some things that are just because tradition, because that's what women do. I think that's ridiculous. But I think point I'm trying to make is I think it is, I don't think people are fairly talking about her. And I think she's being held to some standards that we would not be saying about men.
Let's see. Your commentary about voting, I'm with you. Your commentary about people who are voting for Trump is very insulting. I'm not voting for him, But I know many reasonable people who are.
I do, too. I at no point said anyone stupid is voting. I tried to believe that everybody is moral and intelligent. And what I started this segment by saying was, I never want anyone to be right. I'm not trying to get people to believe what I think. I want to make space to have the dialogue. And that's where I started this conversation. I started by saying that. I do believe the other people on the other end of the conversation are moral and intelligent, and I want to engage in the conversation. So when people text and say, XYZ, I'm not going to discuss it, you're in fact saying I don't want to engage in the conversation.
Right. I like what... Dialogue is good. Space is good. Where are you at? Let me understand you. You can understand me. That's the thing.
Like George Lakoff has written about this a lot, right? Have you ever read his book, Don't Think of an Elephant? It's a great book. It's very interesting, but it's about the way we argue. And it essentially says, like, if you take, say, like the gun debate, one side is talking about the right to have a weapon. The other side is talking about safety concerns around having weapons available. At no point are you having the same dialogue. You're not even speaking the same language.
Right.
But if you get to a point where you say, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, we're all talking about safety, really, whether it's defending yourself or not. You know what I mean? We're all talking about it on some level. Let's get into a space and have that conversation. Until we do that, we're just going to keep throwing facts across the aisle at each other, and it'll be divisive and unproductive.
We got a lot of people want to weigh in. We can do that after the 2:30 news, which is in 1 minute. But I think just to say one thing on that. People want to like win a conversation or...
And that's the problem. Right. People want to win.
Right. So we can continue that in a second. 720 WGN. Everybody wants a blast of
magic. 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Mark Harmon in for Bill and Wendy today. My friends, the debate, the big debate is just 3 days away. So we've been talking about that. You know, we kicked off that segment, that conversation anyway, talking about how, you know, we're not trying to win a debate here of our own. We're trying to have thoughtful and meaningful conversation. We want to make a space to hold the conversation. And in doing so, we have to all come into that conversation with a little bit of discomfort. We have to say, I'm going to be a little uncomfortable. I'm going to step outside of my comfort zone a little bit to facilitate dialogue, to have a conversation, to engage in thoughtful dialogue with people who don't necessarily think what I think.
Yeah, you know where things move, not in your comfort zone. When you get out of your comfort zone, then maybe you might learn something. And I'm talking about myself, by the way, too.
All of us, yeah.
I hang in my comfort zone all the time. Good to step out of it and then actually...
And expand a little bit. Right. I think we can all agree, no matter how you're voting, dialogue is broken in this country. It is broken, perhaps in the whole world right now. We're having tug of war games. And I think as pro technology as I am, I think social media is facilitating that to a large extent. We are having tug of war because we all want to be right instead of just say, hey, let's have conversation. We have completely lost the art of that, of let's just sit down and discuss it. People get angry and immediately shut down. And even when sometimes people call here or text here and they say, I think differently than you think. End of conversation.
Right. I mean, people are texting right now. You're biased. Yes.
Every human being on the face of the earth has a bias. It is the way neuroscience works. Every human being has a bias. That is what makes us human.
Yeah. Of course I'm biased. Of course I know who I'm going to vote for. And this is a talk show. This is not, we're not moderating a debate here. So, I mean, personally, when I'm listening to the radio or anything, I want to know where people stand and what's important to them. And also having somebody that's open and can listen to what you're talking about, Amy, right? I mean, listen, I don't pretend to have all the answers here. And I mean, let's be honest here. I'm mostly, when I do shows on the station, most times I'm doing it on sports. I mean, I want to talk about Colin Kaepernick right now. We've put that on the back burner. So, listen, I'm open to the conversation. But yes, of course, I have an opinion. Come on. I would think you'd want people that actually have an opinion.
Don't necessarily want someone who has an opinion. I want to engage in dialogue with people. And I want someone to facilitate dialogue. You know what I mean? I often, like the evening shows that I do here on the station, I often tackle big topics. And I usually step off into it by saying, we're going to hear from a lot of different people on this topic. And I want to hear from you. And let's all just have a thoughtful conversation where all the voices are welcome in it.
Right.
Rather than, we don't need to necessarily get to a conclusion. The act of having the conversation is valuable to me.
Saturday night, 7 to 9.
That's the one.
That's what we're talking about. Before that, you can listen to The Beat. What a wonderful Saturday. Thank you very much. Okay, enough for promotion. Elise, you want to talk about the major issues being ignored. Welcome to 720 WGN.
Hi, Elise.
Hi, thank you. I really appreciate your time. I've called a few times, never got through. I just want to state a few facts that I feel. And I'm listening to people saying, like, well, I don't like her clothes, what she wears. The whole thing is our country and what goes on. First of all, people have said, Donald Trump hasn't had experience. What experience did Obama have? Another, you know, he came in, he wasn't experienced. Another thing is Hillary said the other day, she doesn't know, a lot of people are undecided, but yet she said Trump supporters are deplorable.
She said half.
I mean, really, how nasty. Also, that she's totally against coal miners. I mean, these people, this is their life, coal miners. And then health care, Obamacare has cost everyone, not even part of Obamacare, it's cost everybody's insurance more, and it's a disaster. Ask any physician. Credibility, Clinton Foundation, these countries, you know, she talks about women's rights and all these countries that she has taken monies from, millions, they rape, kill, beat, knife. They're women. There's no respect for women. How do you accept monies from a country like that?
Okay, Elise, hang on. Let us respond. You've laid a lot out there.
Let me just finish a few more things. And also, she's been in Congress. She's been Secretary of State. What has she really accomplished? What happened with Benghazi and lying to the families? And why is she hiding all these emails? I mean, tearing them up.
Okay.
And then after she was notified, she still is tearing
all right,
them up.
All right, Elise, we're going to respond to you. Go ahead.
Elise, I think it's really important, you know, that when we're... You know, I applaud what you're doing because I think it's important that we look at every candidate with great scrutiny. But I think what's also important is that we do so equally, you know, and we look at and which I think is the interesting thing, too, right now, because we're not in a place where we're having a lot of dialogue. We tend to go into a lot of extremism and there's a sort of cultural moment we're in which if you are critical about even a candidate that you're very much backing, say one critical thing and suddenly people assume you're on the other side, which I think is very problematic because I think it's important that we think critically about the people representing us in the world and in our communities. All of our elected officials should be raked over the coals. We should be very critical of all of them. But I think you can support a candidate and it's important to be critical of them. It's just as, you know, you can love this country and all the things that's great about it, but still work to make it better. I think that's an important thing that we're not engaging in very well. We're very, very black and white on this election, that either like the littlest thing, if you don't love that about that candidate, somehow you're betraying them.
Right. And well, in Benghazi, I mean, that gets a lot of play, right? Nobody that is in elected office is perfect. I mean, you want to go back to Reagan, who gets thrown out a lot. I mean, you had hundreds of Marines that died in Beirut. You want to go to George W. Bush. There was 39 NBC attacks, 87 deaths while he was in the office. They're not going to be able to make the world completely safe. It's a ridiculous standard to have this whole notion that who's ever in office is going to be perfect and everybody is going to be fine. It's not ever going to be that way. And if you go through the history of any president or secretary of state, then there's going to be quote unquote blood on their hands. I mean, that's the reality. To me, that's just unfair scrutiny, that part of it. I don't.
What part?
Well, Benghazi. It's like, hey, man, you know, what are we actually talking about here?
Well, I think to scrutinize and to condemn are two different things.
Okay.
I think, that, you know, scrutiny is always fair.
That's fine.
But I don't think condemnation is necessarily fair.
And if we're talking about charity, then, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of pay for play, quote unquote, right, with Donald, and then you look at where Hillary is at and where her foundation is ranked. I mean, so that foundation gets the Clinton Foundation gets huge, huge high ratings. I mean, that's
right. And my point is
higher than Susan J. Komen for The Cure,
sure.
Higher than the American Red Cross. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Right. And my point is only it's. I think it is very important to be critical of candidates, but to do so to both candidates. Yeah. I think it is dangerous any time we are on board with a candidate, hook, line, and sinker. We need to be able to say, like, okay, if I'm finding, and I do this, I do this myself. If I find a fault in a candidate I'm not backing, I will immediately go look for that fault in the candidate I am backing because I want to be fair in my scrutiny of them.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And if in this particular election.
Where the stakes are very high.
Yes. But on the other side, like, as far as Hillary as a candidate, people wanting to look under every rock and talking the fact that she is a woman, throw that in there. If the Republicans had ran somebody more down the middle,
we'd be having a very different conversation.
We'd be having a very different conversation. I mean, a lot of this conversation is about who the two people are that are going for the most powerful office in the world.
Very, very personality driven in this election, and perception of personality too.
Let's take another call here. 312-981-7200. Who do you like, Amy? Who would you like to talk to? I know you love them all.
I want to talk to everybody. There's.
Do you want me to pick?
Yeah, you pick. I picked the last one.
Let's see. Let's go with Patty. She won't vote for Hillary because of Bill. Let's go, Patty.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you? Well, first of all, I just want to say that I totally agree with some of the callers that I cannot stand her pantsuits. I don't think they're stylish, and I think she should have worn a dress when she got nominated. I was shocked at that. But regardless of that, I am furious when people that say that she's a strong person. I go way back. I lost total respect for her when she did not divorce Bill with what he did. We're taught to try and be strong women in this society, and there's nothing worse than cheating in a marriage and making a mockery of a marriage in front of the whole world and Chelsea. I think it's deplorable. Absolutely deplorable, and she will never get my respect for that.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay, Patty, what do you like about Donald?
I love Donald. Well, he says it like it is. And I will say that his kids are in the background, not now, but, you know, for having all the money he had, I give his kids and him total respect. They could be on magazine covers every month for years back. They're not. They're very bright people. Yes, he got money, but he built his empire with brains, too. And I want new ideas. I cannot stand Obama. And just the fact, again, that Hillary should have divorced Bill. Who doesn't look at Bill and say Monica? Who doesn't in this society? And that's, to me, awful.
Okay, Patty, got you.
And that's a woman, you know.
We got you, Patty. 312-981-7200.
I think it's very interesting when we say things like Trump says it like it is.
A lot of people say that.
A lot of people say that. That is a thing I've heard a lot of people say. A lot of people have called and expressed their support of him and used that line. And indeed, he has his own unique style that we don't see a lot in politics. I have to counter that, though, by saying if he were as tell it like it is and just say it truthfully as he's getting credited for doing, why not release those taxes?
Well, and also, I mean, we mentioned it earlier in the show that as PolitiFact went through what he said in the Republicans.
There were inaccuracies.
Well, he lied 60% of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not, by definition, telling it like it is. That's actually like telling it like it isn't.
It is.
But yet he's been able to have that narrative where people, lots of people, he tells it like it is. He tells it like it is. There's a lot of
He has a provocative style of speaking.
Right.
I don't know that he's telling it like it is, because if he's being, you know, as you said, 60% of a given conversation is going to be fact checked to be inaccurate. That's not really telling it like it is. But I think I think we should just be a little clearer with what we mean when we say telling it like it is.
Let's take a final time out here. And Rose up at 3, more of you. And I might slip in just one little sporty thing here that the Chicago Cubs are doing, which, along with Major League Baseball, it's just unfortunate. 720 WGN. Thank you.
Did you know, Mark Carmen, that Snapchat users can now register to vote right from within the app?
No way.
It's true.
Come on.
It is a partnership between Snapchat and the voter registration app called TurboVote. And you can register to vote right there within Snapchat.
Wow.
I will be curious to see how that goes.
How's your Snapchat going?
When I remember to use it, it's going fine.
What are you on Snapchat?
I'm at Amy Guth on all the platforms.
Interesting. Is that the strategy? Should be the same thing on all your platforms?
I think it's important to get your own name if possible.
Okay. I mean, I'm the Carm. Do you like that? The article and then Carm?
Sure.
I think that's more powerful. The Carm. Like, there's other Carms around there, the fake Carms, but I'm the Carm.
I see. Of course you are. Of course you are.
One thing on the Cubbies in a second, but I want to take one call here. Let's just go with who's waited the longest. Loyalty.
Loyalty is rewarded.
D, that would be you. Go ahead, D. What are your thoughts on the debate Monday night?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. In my opinion, all those perfect people, first off, that are calling in, oh, you've never had a divorce, you didn't stay with your man that was screwing around. Oh, good for you. Others choose the choices that are good for them. Everyone has an opinion and an armpit. And trust me, they have a right to them, okay? Now, my comment is, I don't like the idea of someone building a wall to keep people out of America. America has taken in everyone. The Statue of Liberty tells us, give us your homeless, just anyone, give them to us. We're going to take care of them. But now you're going to build a wall to keep people from coming in here? The only dumb one that was in America when Columbus thought he was here and, you know, he discovered it was the Hispanics and the Indians. So why are you going to be on the wall for somebody who was here before you?
D.
That's just my opinion.
D, I love you.
Thank you, D.
Okay, bye-bye.
I love a history lesson at the end of the show. That
She's
was helpful.
Exactly right.
She is.
We start the story of the U.S. with Columbus followed by pilgrims. In fact, that is inaccurate. It started way before. We showed up. Right. Like, we got to keep that in our minds all the time.
I like to go back to if I was alive when Columbus was showing up with the pilgrims.
And he didn't show up with pilgrims.
I understand.
Okay. Just so we're clear.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. I just look back. Like, if I was the first person on Earth, Amy, I don't think I would have invented the table. I think we all would have been sitting on the ground and eating with our hands. And it just amazes me to go back in history and be like, how did you guys figure all this out? Like, Columbus, you got in a boat and were like, I know this world is round. I'm heading out there. I'm going to prove it.
Yeah, bold move.
I mean, that's like soup's bold. I would have been sitting in my little corner on the ground eating dirt and being like, this is cool. I have no big vision of what's possible at all.
Imagining the side of the earth where you fall off and get eaten by a dragon or something.
Full terror. Yeah. Hey, all right, Rose up next, real quick. The Cubs in Major League Baseball, they filed suit in federal court today against several vendors hawking illegal or what allegedly counterfeit trademark merchandise. Like when you go to Wrigley Field and those dudes all around the park that you're buying t-shirts from for less than they sell them in the park, they don't want those guys there. I personally would never buy a t-shirt from somebody who wasn't on the street. I would never pay ballpark prices for it. So as we move into the playoffs and the World Series, please support your illegal vendors. That's my message to you at the end of the show. Are you okay with that, Amy?
I mean, I'm like, let's focus on the task at hand and worry about t-shirts later, I feel like.
Oh, that's another side of it. But okay, more on the beat with that tomorrow at 3.
Right.
I'm devoting the whole show.
I'm gonna let the in-depth sports coverage.
Thank you. Thank you. In depth.
Be over there on your show.
All right. Rose next, 720 WGN. Thanks to Kevin Richter for getting married and taking Bill and Wendy away so Amy and I could fill in. Congratulations. Kevin, Roe, and Anna are here. Well, happy Friday. Canargo Wagon. Yeah. 3 days to the debate.
What could possibly go right? Well, let's see here. We'll get you a little ready for that. It's going to be pretty much a politics-free zone today. A lot of entertainment on the show. We will have Mark McKinnon, though, from the Circus on Showtime. He'll be here to talk, presage the debate, not predict, just presage the debate. Susan Schmidt will also tell us how the debate is affecting the markets, because it is, which is kind of interesting. And there's a young kid in comedy, and I believe he's also trying to break into radio, named Steve Cochran, who's going to join us here coming up in a few minutes. So I'm gonna learn who he is and find out more about him.
Yeah, I think he hosts a radio show. Perhaps
does he?
I
think I've sort of heard of him. Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Very familiar.
Wakes up early in the morning. Who sends it to news at this very moment, Ron?
I will do that in just a second. But also, let me also point out that a very special Canarbo wagon, the Drifters, are going to be here.
Wow,
isn't that great?
Yeah, and they're going to sing for my supper. I don't know how that's working, but
that's fun.
Good. Oh, and Roper's going to review the Magnificent Seven. Are they?
Are they magnificent? Yeah.
Roper. Roper loves Jay Cutler. He's a big fan.
I'll bring that up to him and see how that goes. All right. Well, kids, you have a great weekend.
Thanks, Roper.